Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Welcome to the broadcast, everybody. Good to have you with us again. It's August 27th. Put that out there for all of you that are listening on the podcast. For those of you that don't, that want to say, you know, I missed something on the broadcast, you can go to iTunes. You can download this broadcast and listen to it. Many do. We just have you listen live because we love it when you guys are tweeting us your comments and giving us feedback. It's always valued. Keep you tuning in and being a part of the broadcast, you, the listening audience. Those mortgage professionals across the country that are wanting to get not only just news stories, but commentary and feedback and respect all the news stories that's going on. Well, it's good to have you with us. Again, August 27th, and we have back from vacation and back from business unexpected travel. Alice is back with us, but Joe Farr's back with us from a great vacation.
Good morning,
up
Dave.
In the cooler temperatures. It's good to have you back with us. How was the temperature?
It was hotter than we expected. We were glad we had air conditioning, but it was we're at Park City and it was lovely.
So you did the fly fishing, you did the balloon ride, and did
yeah.
all that. So
yeah,
it's good. It's just good to get away and get to be
good
with
time
family.
With family.
It's so good. Well,
yeah.
Well, before the broadcast, you and I were talking about some of the news stories that went on, and we're going to be talking about today about politics, the role of politics in the mortgage industry. As we've been saying, politicians are getting involved in our business. We might as well get involved in their business, and we've been saying that for a while, but we're actually going to start putting some meat on the bone of that. We have the Republican convention kicking off this week, and we're going to start a series of broadcasts through the whole month of September talking about what does another 4 years with an Obama administration mean? What would 4 years with Romney administration look like? And we're start doing a contrast by that. And so I can't wait to get into that discussion later on in the Hot Topic segment. But without further ado, let's get into what's going on in interest rates. Joe Farr?
Hey, Dave. Well, today we're up. It's a good day so far. So we're up 7:30 seconds from where we ended the day Friday. There were no economic announcements to cause this. I think it's just more of the same as people are beginning to believe more and more that another QE3 is coming. No news out of Europe. Stocks are about unchanged. So it's a nice day for mortgage rates so far.
Good day so far. Let's get into last week while you were gone. What was going on? It's fairly it was a good week for mortgages.
Good, yeah, it was a good week for mortgages. Reversed about half of the big drop that we saw beginning in late July. We've improved about 1% from a low. When was the low? The low was on the 16th of August. So since the 16th of August, we've improved about 1% in price. But we're still about 1% below where we were in late July, so we're not quite all the way back, and I don't know if we'll get all the way back. Those were all-time highs in MBS prices. The driving force still seems to be the Fed and what it might do, as well as ECB and what it might do. Notice what it might do.
There's still so many
uncertainties out there, but going way back to the end of July, the Draghi comments about we'll do whatever it takes, and then the Fed positions, the jobs report, things really indicated that interest rates could fall, and we saw them fall from the end of July into the middle of August, and now that the Fed has come back out and said what they've said about I'll get into the Fed meeting minutes this week. It was a big driver. Actually, it's last week.
But the Fed's
causing people to believe QE3 is more likely, which is causing interest rates to improve. So let's look at during the week, last week, the minutes of the August 1st Fed meeting came out. And they were surprising in that they showed a greater sense that QE3 was needed. They used words like many of its members felt that further yeah. easing would be necessary and felt like it would be necessary unless substantial and sustainable improvement was seen. The market is really focused on the fact that QE3 will come out. And the question is, when will they announce it? And this week might be one of those opportunities, but I'll talk about that in a second. During the week last week, actually, the economic data was pretty good. The housing data was good. Existing home sales are up 2% from June. July's new home sales were up 4% from June. Durable orders were up much better than expectations. And even though all that favorable economic data came out and ordinarily would have been negative for mortgage rates had their a very good week. And again, it's all focused on, what the governments, what the Fed central banks are going to do, both in the U.S. and in Europe.
All right.
And I mentioned the opportunity may be ahead of us soon. On Friday, Bernanke will be making a speech from the Jackson Hole Summit. And it was at that same summit that he made one of his QE announcements before. So it's not out of possible for that to happen. So Friday during the day, we'll be watching intently to see what might come out from the Jackson Hole Summit. During the week, economic events are going to be quite numerous. Although again, I expect most of the market movement is going to come from other sources. But tomorrow, consumer confidence comes out. Wednesday, spending, home sales, and the Fed base book. You might remember last time the base book came out, it was a market moving event.
It was
Thursday's core PCE, and then new jobless claims, and then on Friday the Chicago PMI, consumer sentiment, and factory orders. Combine that with Treasury auctions of the 2s, 5s, and 7s on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and it's really a pretty busy week. The one thing we don't have is a significant scheduled event coming out of Europe. We're going to see some of those beginning the first half of September, but you never know. An announcement or speech by any one of the central bank members could have an impact on the market. And that's it.
There's a lot. This could be an interesting week. Could be a very big week. Now, what are your thoughts that QE3 is already priced into the market, that if we don't see a QE3 announcement at some point in the near future, that we're going to see the market drop off? I heard some commentary on that this week.
I expect that's very, very likely.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say the 1% change in price that we've seen just in the last week is a reflection of that primarily.
Right. Yeah, and that's my concern. When I was on CNBC on when was that? I think that was Tuesday or Wednesday this last week. No, it was on Monday actually. It was on Monday and a week ago today. And when it caught my attention when they were talking about it in the background as I was waiting to go live. And they're saying a lot of that's priced into the market. As a result of that, if we don't see them doing that, we could see some consequences. So they feel like they're getting the effects of the QE3, Joe, without having to yet do it. So it's like I think as long as that's in the market, then they don't have to come forward with it per se. More criticism.
No, but they can only do that for so long. I mean, the expectations are that something's going to happen soon, and soon. May not be Jackson Hole soon, may not be the September Fed meeting, but I don't think they can wait till after the election.
Yeah, exactly. No, I think if anything's going to happen, it'll happen before the election for sure. Well, Joe, it's good to have you back. We appreciate it. It's always better to have you live. We appreciate you pre-record these comments so our listeners get an update, but it's just a whole lot better to get it live. We appreciate you being back and glad you had a good vacation.
Thank you.
You bet. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for that competitive edge?
MBS Quoteline delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect and know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS Quoteline, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS Quoteline today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
I love it when that mute button, I forget to turn off the mute button, busily doing things on the radio program and the switchboard and doing things, and I forget to get to turn on the, off the mute button. So anyway, it's good to have you back with us again. Again, it's August 27th, and back on the program is Alice Alvey, the voice of everything going on regulation-wise. And I keep saying this, I get this comment, Alice, over and over. I just, you know, if I got bad news, someone's going to give me bad news. Let it be a voice like Alice Alvey. Her personality is upbeat or positive, and yet you just shoot it straight. So what do you got for us this week, Alice?
Oh, Dave, you know, it's crazy. I thought I'd make sure that we got everybody kind of calmed down a little bit with all the Dodd-Frank proposed rules that are out there right now, because we're definitely in the phase of the big wave. So for the last couple of weeks, we've had the main parts of Dodd-Frank that are going to affect not only the front end, but also the servicing proposed rule came out as well. But my focus today is going to be on the front end. So if we can get by these five main proposals that are out there right now, then all that's left, I shouldn't say all that's left, because to a lot of folks, QM and QRM, and to us, too, are a very big deal. That leaves QM and QRM on the table, and then it leaves some disclosures out there. We would have a new settlement cost booklet. We're going to have a couple of new FHA disclosures, really just related to the home inspection, and we are going to get a new disclosure on escrow accounts that will be given to the customers up front during the application stage. So these big five that are facing us right now, you know, at least the only consolation prize is, okay, this is it. It's here, right? We now have to jump in and respond. So the first one that we have is the integrated mortgage disclosure, so combining the GFE and the TIL. This is the monster.
Right.
You want to start here. Make sure you get a chance to look at it. And, you know, there was a lot of testing. So for those of you who did go out and look at all the sample GFEs and TILs that were out there, you're a little further around the curve and being able to go, okay, I like where we're landing here. The forms really are, I think, we're not going to get a lot of chances to make huge modifications unless we find something that's really fundamentally wrong with the form, because the design and everything was already tested through the CFPB website. So look at the new forms. We're not going to call it a HUD-1 anymore, Dave. We've called it a HUD-1 for 30 years.
How are we going to change, bro?
I know. Maybe that'll be the most dramatic point of all. It's going to be called, you know, it's going to be a settlement statement now where you can't have a HUD number on a CFPB form, right? So it's pretty basic.
That's right.
The biggest thing out of there, I think we can handle new disclosures. We'll certainly have some transitional training points. But one of the biggest things in here is this transaction coverage rate, so a new acronym, TCR. This is going to include all the fees. And the TCR is potentially going to be used to as our comparison for a high-cost mortgage. So if you think of that you very rarely, if ever, trigger Section 32, well, it's going to potentially be a new number, so you need to comment on that. Comment on, no, let's keep it the APOR, because it is about the cost of the financing, and we shouldn't be including everything, including third-party fees, in that determination. So we want to make sure that we have a say in what is a high-cost mortgage. Now, I will tell you, this TCR concept has been out there for a while. It was part of an older Federal Reserve Board proposed rule. So it's hard to say whether or not this is a definite that it's going to come into play. So you need to comment. They are going to tighten up the 10% rule on the GFE also. So affiliate fees, things we should know about because we're, you know, affiliated with the company and we know the region, we really do need to take a look at that 10% tolerance question as well. So you have, for these components, the main components, you have until November 6th to comment about the new GFE. But this transaction coverage rate, you only have till September 7th, which, folks, that's only a week or so away, right?
Wow.
I believe, 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So We do have that one. The second proposed rule is about the truth in lending and changing the basically what we've always called Section 32, and it would apply to everything. They would be lowering the percentage to 6.5 points for loan amounts that are under $50,000 and 8.5% for subordinate liens. So it sounds like, you know, if for those of you in areas where you don't do a lot of loans below $50,000, you go, oh, okay, great, I don't have to worry too much about this. But you've got to think about this. They're talking about changing it to use this transaction coverage rate. 6.5 could be hit pretty quickly if we're counting all fees and we're not just using an APOR. So, and also the rule would implement a 5% fee cap that includes LO compensation for loan amounts over $20,000. So there's another component of this you do have to care about. It would be 8% or $1,000 for loans of $20,000 or less. So it really is this, you know, the RESPA TILA combined disclosure rule has a component that impacts this high cost mortgage rule. Okay, so those two pieces really do work together. All right, then the one everybody's kind of looking at, and I know, Joe, you, I don't know if you want to chime in here, we can talk about later, and that's the loan originator compensation. So this comment period is open until October 16th, and it would change that we couldn't charge discount, origination, or any other upfront origination fees that are retained by the creditor when the originator is paid a commission. So that's probably the big, that's the one change. But what was good about this is the fact that they're not implementing all the scare that was out there about the flat fee rule. So that's the good news out of this. The creditor would have to be showing the customer what a zero-cost loan looks like, and zero-cost being defined as fees paid to the creditor. So you wouldn't be having to come up with a true, like what I would call zero-cost, right, where I get an all-in price to cover even my appraisal and credit report. They're talking here in the rule that it would have to be that we charge essentially a zero-point, you know, zero-lender-cost loan.
So Alice, I just wanted to ask, so if a discount point is paid, the originator can still be paid a commission, right?
As long as it's a bona fide commission. So that's the next part that I was going to get to. Bona fide point, right. So in the rule, they're saying, how do you define bona fide? You know, they're outright asking. And, you know, how would we measure that, for example, in an audit to say this is a bona fide point that bought it down a quarter or an eighth? So as long as it's bona fide points, then you're fine. But the idea of trying to kind of get a commission paid out of, you know, when there's origination points or other upfront fees retained by the creditor, you know, that's a challenge. So it really does seem like they're trying to change the dynamic of how pricing is going to work. And we're going to be playing with these numbers a little bit more as we get a chance to dissect it a little bit further. So one of the good things, too, is, you know, today you have that if there's a last-minute fee change, the loan originator can't make any changes to the compensation or to the – I'm sorry, not the compensation, to the charges to the customer. So the proposal would allow that the originator could – say, give back part of their compensation. This is obviously more for a broker where they say, oh, I've got this small fee or my customer is going to walk over a $200 fee. Would I be able to issue an unanticipated credit if there was an unanticipated increase in costs and that I can cover that through my compensation? So they are looking to try and come up with wording for that, which I think is good. So it gives the brokers, that helps level the playing field a little bit better for the brokers. And the other leveling of the playing field was the education side. So the proposed rule talks about the SAFE Act and trying to get depositories on the same wavelength. To me, it's just saying to the depositories, keep doing what you're doing. You know, they say they're going to have to go to education programs. And, as far as I think, the depositories are going to think, well, we do that already. I've seen some of their education. It's not mortgage department specific, so hopefully we can get them to make some changes there. And then the last thing about the rule is that it would allow loan officers to get some type of profit sharing and bonus plans. There's some rules about how that would be structured, but, you know, as long as it's not tied directly to, you know, I closed X million of dollars and so I got X a bonus. Because, I had a loan officer. She called me up not too long ago. Everybody at the company got bonuses except for the loan officers. And she's like, you know, even if it was just $200, I would have been happy. Just show some appreciation. So I think there's definitely some good news in there that they could get some bonus and non-qualified sharing, profit sharing.
So just to try to summarize, Alice, the good thing about this rule is somewhat what it didn't do. For instance, the original proposals by the CFPB considered a flat fee for a flat origination fee. And that's not in here, right? That's a good
right.
thing.
And they then actually went on a couple pages about why they chose not to do that. Yes.
Yeah. And another good thing is that originators under the current loan originator compensation most likely are not allowed to participate in any sort of profit sharing, and this would allow them to do that under certain
right.
restrictions, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And then anything that you see here that will be different for most retail originators from what they're currently going through?
From a retail lending standpoint, you know, really would be kind of company by company on the pricing options. I'm not sure how the pricing options are going to pan out for a zero-cost loan program, because I know, you know, some of the community banks and so forth, they can't offer a zero-cost, or they don't, and credit unions. And so I'm not quite sure where they'll go with this. But to your typical retail lender, you know, I haven't heard anybody jumping up and down saying, well, I've got a super big problem with this. You know, I'm not going to be able to get this to work. So far, I haven't heard that. But we'll definitely be, you know, I'm not sure everybody's had a chance to go through all 300 pages, because I think in total we had a couple thousand pages of regulations get issued in the last few weeks.
Right.
So maybe we're all still digesting it.
Staggering, yeah.
So one more question, if I can.
Yeah, absolutely, because there's one other thing I want to make sure everybody knows, too. Go ahead.
In the 0 points, zero cost sort of arrangement, that's just that you need to offer that as an alternative. A borrower can still pay points if it's bona fide for interest rate reduction. Can they still pay an origination fee?
Let's see. In the zero cost, well, you can still present pricing options, yes, and the borrower doesn't have to pick the zero cost, obviously.
Right.
I think the concept is they want the customer to see the relationship between the cost and the change in the interest rate.
Okay.
So long as it was presented is what my understanding is, and we're going to get more on that as we get Alice, you get a chance to digest this. We're going to get deeper and deeper into it, but it does look like it's an overall win for the loan originators compared to some of the thoughts that where this could be going and how negative it could have come out. So
right. So the last one is, or the other part of that is to continue the general ban on loan originators being compensated by both consumer and other parties, but there were some refinements to that to help a mortgage broker company still be able to pay its loan officers. So that was another one of the leveling the playing field side. Two last rules, though, folks. I know this segment's going a little longer, but I want to make sure, you know, the ECOA appraisal requirements proposal, the comment periods are open on that one till October 15th. And when you look through this component, I would say if you could ignore one, this would be the one you didn't have to really pay too much attention to, because it really is implementing things we're already doing today, that I have to give my customer 3 days notice for the appraisal, that they can waive it. It does prohibit the lender from charging additional fees for the appraisal, but it does say we would have to give the customer every copy of a copy of all evaluations. So if you're running an AVM, it does appear from the way this proposed rule is written that I'd have to give my customer a copy of those too. And then last but not least is the high-risk mortgage appraisals component, also open until October 15th. This one is one you've got to pay attention to, because the definition being used for a high-risk mortgage appraisal is the same definition as HPML. So think about how many times you trigger HPML at the 1.5% threshold, and that's how many times I'd be triggering that under certain conditions I might have to get a second appraisal at no cost to the borrower. So the component in this one is really that if you've got property flipping going on and you've got a high-risk loan, you've got an HPML loan, your new component is going to be if the seller's owned the house less than 180 days and the seller paid less for the house than the new sale price, you're going to have to get a second appraisal at no cost to the borrower. And CFPB is looking for comments on what would that sale price threshold be. You know, if you're within 5%, is it a big deal, or do we have to use, you know, can we get at least some wiggle room in there and it's not just a brick wall? You're going to have new disclosures. Qualified mortgages would be excluded, but this one's got a straight-up finer penalty in it of a solid $2,000 paid to the borrower if a violation occurs. So on that happy note, no, Dave. No, you know, I think hopefully a lot of you look at that and say, I don't have that many of those loans, but boy, it's just one more layer of procedures. And that one doesn't seem like it's going to get stopped. I mean, that was just this proposed rule was like straight out of what was in Dodd-Frank Act. So.
Again, everyone, I got a couple questions shot to me. HPML, what that stands for again?
Oh, the high-priced mortgage loan that we have in place today. So today we're already watching for that high-priced mortgage
That's
loan, 1.5%. Right.
That is not new. That's there. All right.
Can I ask one more
question?
So
good to have you. Yeah, absolutely.
This is sort of a macro question, but back a month ago, I heard Mitch Kiter, who was on the show last week, mentioned that there were 167 rules to be issued by the CFPB between now and January 21st.
Mm-hmm.
And here are four or five, and then we know we got QM and QRM coming out. Are there still that many more? Do these four or five that we discussed today encompass a number of that 167?
I think when the number comes out of 167, they're definitely including the entire front section of the Dodd-Frank Act that has to do with the Security and Exchange Commission and other areas that don't affect mortgage
mm-hmm.
origination. So for our purposes, yes, some of the count in these four proposed rules, some of these pick up three or four of those items that were listed separate line items in DFA, definitely. Yep.
Any sense, though, Alice, of how much more is coming down at us? And, I mean, knowing that they're consolidating some of these and these points that you're covering, any sense that we're 20% away of all the new regulations? Or are we 50 or 60%? Any sense of that?
Well, yeah. I mean, my opinion from – okay, so these five are this wave. Once we get past this wave, the next big one, obviously the servicing rules are very big for those of you on
right.
that side. But just for the origination side, then what's left is QRM and QM. After that, we're pretty much done with the monsters as far as our side is concerned. You know, then what's left is some disclosures. And, you know, these five are going to be monsters to implement over the next year. So that's
right.
plenty. So, and they've got a long – and Brian Chappell was saying he thought it could be as long as a year and a half or 2 years. You know, Brian Chappell of Potomac Partners was speaking at MMLA before the GFE until are actually having an implementation date. So, you know, this is enough. But I do think it's – so this is the lion's share of the wave right here. And then after that, it's – you know, hopefully we get a little breathing room with just forms to implement, easy to use computer programmed type forms, nothing like a new GFE or two.
Someone just shot a question. Love to get Alice's opinion on the new form. Is it better? Is it overall? I've heard commentary that, you know what, the new form could have been a lot uglier. We're talking about the HUD ones going away, but it actually does accomplish the things that might be actually friendly and beneficial to the industry. Your thoughts, Alice?
I like the forms. I think they did their homework on the forms. We're getting what we've been complaining about, that it doesn't show total funds needed to close. I do think it's laid out very well. And, you know, I think it's a good way to go. I really do. It's tough to go through the change. We just got used to the one that we have, but I think it's a change for the better.
Yeah, I think it did address a number of the shortcomings. I'm looking at it from a plaintiff bar because we deal with so many lawsuits. I'm looking at, what holes are now being created that are enabling a plaintiff bar to come after the industry? So that was kind of my thoughts. But,
overall,
I think it looks definitely an improvement over what was there, and although I think this too will be a moving target. Thank you, Alice. Good to have you back. We're going to be back into this and even more when we get into the a hot topic segment. The NAMBI came out on the LO comp. So if those of you who have not seen the video, their title of it is, "This is a win for all loan originators," the LO comp provisions that I guess got passed. And so there's overall kind of I think we dodged a bullet and for the originators that are in the audience. So that's a good thing. Go out and listen to the recording. I tell you, there's more details coming, though, and you're going to want to stay tuned to this broadcast and know what's going on. Alice, good to have you back, and we'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals,
providing classroom and web-based delivery,
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record, performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees, both live and online, on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lickin'.
Good to have you back with us. I got myself found that mute this time. We're back. So appreciate you being dialed in and tuned in to what we're doing here in the broadcast. We are going to be spending the month of September. Kind of look, publish now what we're going to be talking about in the month of September so you kind of get anticipating it. We have, starting this week, if Isaac doesn't, get any mess up the plans any more than already has, we're going to be starting the Republican National Convention, and we're going to start getting to know what Romney and Ryan is all about, that ticket, what their policies are, where this could take us as an industry, and we're going to start digging deeper and deeper into this and start bringing you an analysis of what's out there. Also, we're going to go out and take a look at what another 4 years with the Obama administration could mean to our industry. And so I'm looking at this, and we're looking at this whole topic of where things are at, where things are going, especially in light of last Friday, the U.S. Treasury announced it's taking steps to expedite, or accelerate is one of the words I saw in one of the articles, the winding down of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And you look at what they're talking about, and what concerns me about that. By the way, there was a lot to do and nothing. I think that statement was a political statement. They're talking about increasing it to 15%, which is, quite frankly, the reality is if they were to really seriously get about it, they'd take it more to 30%. But let's not go there right now. We're going to get into that. In fact, David Stevens, who has been on the broadcast in times past, not the David Stevens of the NBA, although we may get David on as well as some others from the NBA to talk in this series that we're going to be doing in the month of September. But we're David Stevens of United Capital Markets is out there as one of the servicing experts, and we're going to have him on the broadcast. And he was putting out, says, Dave, you know what? I'm not sure that was more of a political statement that signaling where they're going. There's a lot of articles written on that. Joe, I mean, you were gone for 1 week, and like you said, in this news cycle, it seems like you were gone a month with all the things that are out there.
That's right.
This is one of those significant ones, and it got me on the television with Neil Cavuto on Friday. And we were talking about this, and I picked up the phone and called Jay Brinkman. I said, Jay, the NBA has put forth a proposal about what you think would be good as a possible replacement to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And it has to do with a credit guarantee. And it's more on the investor side of it. It resembles the Ginnie Mae program. But getting back to the announcement that the administration, U.S. Treasury through the administration, or the administration through the Treasury put forward, was the winding down. It's a clear signal that they wanted to do away with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And you can get in a whole long argument about should we not. We'll get into that in the month of September. But I think it's a pretty much signal that we can anticipate a world without Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. My question is, what is going to be replacing them? And I think this is where this election starts really playing in, becoming so significant. What is the vision of Romney and Ryan? Interestingly, Governor Romney's dad was the head of HUD. That's I just discovered that in an article I was reading this weekend. He had a failed attempt for the White House and for the Republican ticket, but he ended up being the head of HUD. Many, many years ago. I have to get the years on that. But so it's interesting. What did that put in Governor Romney's mind as it relates to housing? We're about ready to find out. This conference or the convention that's about ready to start will be getting some signals as to what we can anticipate. So we're going to have a series of guests on in the month of September, but we're going to start talking about that now today. So in the month of September, we have already got
Tom Piercy is going to be coming on talking about the value of servicing, what's the latest developments that are going on there. Talked to Tom earlier today, and he says, Dave, I've never seen so many articles about politics coming across my desk as a result of recent developments in the industry. David Stevens forwarded me a document that he wrote about the GSE portfolio reduction targets and what that means. We're also going to have Les Parker on. So we've got a really talented group of individuals that are doing an outstanding job of keeping their finger on the pulse of the industry and what's going on, and we'll be bringing that to you in the month of September. So we're looking forward to that broadcast. By the way, Andy Schell would normally be speaking during this time. He is out traveling on business. I should have mentioned that at the top of the segment. But I want to spend the rest of this broadcast really getting in and talking about what we can anticipate with an Obama White House and a Romney-Ryan White House. So I saw a movie, Alice and Joe, this weekend that really was it got me thinking. And it, the movie is 2016, Obama's America. And what it's really what it's about is it really did a good job of saying we as Americans did not know who this guy was. We did not know his roots, what his foundation was, what drove him, his thoughts, his processes. And so this individual, an East Indian individual that is now the president of a university here in America, interesting, he was born the same year as Obama. He went to an Ivy League school the same year as Obama, got married the same year as Obama, has the same number of kids. I mean, just so many parallels. And so he could relate to Obama's history. And what he did is he went out in this movie and began to study what is it that is in Obama's background that we can anticipate to look into what the next 4 years are going to look like. It is not a hit piece. It's not a movie that goes out and attacks Obama. That's not what he does here. I encourage anyone who's listening to this broadcast, write down that movie, Google. It's on for a short period of time. By the way, it was one of those budget movies they intend to run just in a few select theaters. It did so well. Fandango had the highest pre-release ticket sales for this movie than any other movie, and not by a little bit, by a long shot. And it ended up at number 9 out of the top 10 movies over the weekend, and so it might be playing longer, but at the risk of it not out there, I encourage every listener to go out and do this. Say, Dave, you're starting to turn political with your radio program. Really, we all need to pay attention to this election. And so with that, I encourage you to go out and watch them. Let's get into it. Let's start talking about that. Joe, the announcement of beginning to wind the GSEs, let's start with you. What are your thoughts on that? And the value for so many of our listeners as they listen to this broadcast, they go, it's not only you telling us what's going on in the news, but it's your thoughts. Joe, your thoughts on the wind down of the agencies.
The wind down... I haven't seen the details, but I expect that they're talking about the size of their balance sheet, not the participation in the market just yet. I mean, winding down their balance sheet could have the impact of adding supply into the market, could cause a reaction to cause mortgage rates to rise a little bit, depending on how quickly they try to do that. The true effect on the market comes when they begin to extract themselves from the securitization side of things, which I don't think it's not in the cards anytime soon. No question they will begin to raise their guarantee fees, and as they do that, they're going to become less favorable to the market as opposed to a private conduit. But, winding down in the form of shrinking the balance sheet is one thing, winding out of the origination and securitization side of the market's another. And I don't see that happening for many, many years. I don't think anyone has suggested it's going to happen anytime sooner than years away. And I don't see either side being more or less prone to do so. I guess if anyone were going to be more prone to make that happen quicker, it'd be the Republican side of things, given their their pro-capitalist bent and the need to get government out.
Yeah, I think one of the things they did talk about was they're also making the underwriting requirements more conservative, and they're talking about eliminating a 5% down, except for in a few specific programs, but really taking away that, requiring a full 10% down. Al, any sense of how many 95% loans are even being done out there today?
Well, there are definitely the companies that are capitalizing on the HARP program, which are way over 95 LTVs. And,
right.
You know, certainly there's definitely an increase in conventional financing, and FHA still hanging in there. But to me, that's the second layer. So, you know, you brought up the first layer, Joe, and that's just kind of they're not getting out of the securitization business anytime soon. So the second component is if we get somebody private in here, what are we going to be left with in terms of underwriting standards? So, you know, is anybody in the private sector going to be willing to take the same level of risks? And like you said, Dave, I think we would see LTV changes. We would potentially see credit score changes and so forth. So that's a big unknown. I think we're a long way off from being able to see anything daylight on the street level. We were getting some rumors from some customers saying that there's supposed to be a big announcement coming up here, you know, in the next month or so about some kind of better, more coordination between the two of them and potentially on the underwriting side. So we'll wait and see. I don't like to start rumors, but, you know, there's minor steps, I think, coming along.
Well, they did report in this article that they said that they're moving the FICO scores from 620 to 640, and that's not a big significant amount. So they did signal with this that there are going to be tightening up on the credit standards. And the question was, is this going to have an impact? Well, you know, how many loans are being done at the 95%? I did a quick polling out there. There are not, I mean, other than HAMP and HARP and the various special programs that are there, but as far as new originations, not a lot are being done there. Well, what was an interesting statistic that came out of the MBA was that the number of that home sales are going to be anticipating to continue to increase in 2013, but the amount of financing is needed to do that is actually going to drop. So the amount of homes being purchased and paid for the cash purchases are actually increasing to the point where while home sales will be increasing, the amount of use of mortgage financing is going to be decreasing. So, again, significant data points as we look forward. But here's the thing what I really find interesting. I am starting to get more and more emails and indications that there is a very healthy secondary market, private secondary market, trying to form. But the problem is, as long as the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are a part of the federal government, and if you run with the theory or the concept that Democrats are going to want to have more government, not less, and Republicans want less government, then I think it's very probable that you're going to see Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac continue with an Obama White House and another 4 years of what is the perceived to be government, and it's hard to argue that considering you see CFPB and all the things that are going on in our industry. It's feel like more government now. So I think they're going to anticipate seeing that. If that's the case, I think we could see Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac continuing, not as a part of departments within the federal government. Thoughts from both of you on that before we move on to the next one?
Dave, recently the FHFA has changed how Fannie and Freddie are going to pay back pay the government for the money advanced to them to bail them out. And what they've said is no longer you're going to have to pay the 10% dividend that you've been paying or interest basically on
right.
the advances. We're just going to take your profits. Now, that was really a good thing for the market given that there was a limit on how much they had agreed to advance. And that limit was going to be reached if they continued to borrow money to pay money. And so
right.
by making that change, they've extended the
mm-hmm.
the level of comfort that investors need to rely on their guarantee, and therefore most likely have extended their life.
There is no question that the life has been extended there, potentially. But how do you see that changing if we have a Romney White House?
I would see the Romney White House. Neither side is going to be able to change things dramatically. Given the importance of housing to the economy.
Absolutely.
But as you said earlier, the Republican theories ought to include an effort to get out sooner rather than later, and the Democratic theories would indicate that they don't want to leave a lot of the markets that may be left in a private sector environment. So.
Yeah, there's a general fear among the Democrats that, I mean, it seems to be, this is what I'm picking up from so many emails I'm getting on the topic, especially after being on television this way, and, you know, pretty much being indicating that I'm more down the lines of less government and all that. The concept is that the Democrats really will keep this thing and keep their involvement. And I think there's a general concern out there. That will this really foster the kind of growth? Will we be always under these kind of constraints? Alice, CFPB is certainly putting some constraints on these. And the thought of more regulation is something that many lenders is going, I'm not sure I want to live in this environment that, you know, with more and more of this.
Right, and I think we're, you know, trying to say where does it go from here? So I want to go back to
That's
a second
correct.
For this from the score thing. So it's my understanding the 640 score was just for the arms, right? That they raised the
that's
minimum
right.
score.
And they started with the arms, they're going to also do it with some other areas. And they're talking about continuing to raise the bars. But they're starting with the arms, that's right. You're correct.
Right. And then as you're looking at those changes, so you say, okay, now what does that do to FHA? So, again, to the point of we just keep switching it from one government entity to the other on who's now going to be able to do those loans. So that just leaves FHA now with, you know, a bigger slice of that 620 to 640 credit score range that if they move to that for a fixed rate product. I don't know if I see them moving to that for a fixed rate, but we'll see. And I don't know politically kind of who's going to be better or worse on this, because the CFPB is built out of Dodd-Frank, and if we can say we just don't want any more, and at this point I don't know if having an election in a couple of months is going to make any of this go away. That's
no.
my big thing. You know, I think some people are hoping if I vote one way, is that going to change any of these proposed rules and make them go away? And I don't know if that's – I don't think that's a fair thing to anticipate.
No,
I
don't think anything's going away. And I think the fact that there has been such a consolidation, I think this was one of the purposes of consolidating as many regulatory bodies in and under the CFPB by virtue of fact of the consolidation happening, wiping out and bringing them all into one agency, it almost guaranteed that they're going to be here, but – how are they going to be here is where I think we're going to start seeing where this goes. Now, the commentary I got from several of the people I'm talking to as potential guests for the month of September, they're saying we absolutely need to get rid of the CFPB. There is still a hope and a desire with some that it go away. Is that, in your perspective, realistic, Alice? Doesn't sound like it.
Well, I don't know how people think they're going to get, you know, all 800 of those people out of that building real quick.
I'll just set it on fire. Yeah.
I don't think that's a quick turn. I don't know. I'm not one for you know, let's go, you know, shoot everything that's good about the CFPB, because there certainly are some components that needed paying attention to. We're, you know,
right.
Dave, you and I were talking about looking at some loans as expert witnesses. You see legacy stuff from 2007 and you go, what were we thinking that we let this stuff close and there's nothing in the file and they're telling us they were a waitress making $6,000 a month, you know.
Yeah.
What were we thinking?
Yeah. I think that's the part where there is a very indefensible position that we don't need regulation. And I think it's what type of regulation and how does Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac specifically play into that? I'm looking at the clock and how much time we have. What I am really encouraged by as a result of being on the two Fox broadcasts this last week and a CNBC broadcast, it does bring a lot of phone calls and commentary that comes in as a result of that. I was very surprised, if not shocked, at the amount of the number of private investors, private capital, really wanting to get into the market. But they said, Dave, we will not get in and not come in. Create a healthy secondary market, private secondary market, until such time as we don't have to worry about the federal government coming in and undercutting the guarantee fees. They're all positioning themselves on coming in, and the anticipation, Joe, that the guarantee fees are going to continue to rise, and that there's actually going to be a place for them in this in the market. But their fear is that if there's another Democratic, you know, another 4 years with the Obama, that it is actually going to retard, if not delay. They don't say it'll ever go away, because they do want to come back. They do believe the private markets will come back. But they said it will do more to keep us on the sidelines until we get a sense of some certainty on there. Joe, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's perfectly logical. I don't know why you'd come into an environment where you don't know the rules down the road. And when you have the government who are in it really just for the short-term economic benefits that will come from their, their involvement. How can you anticipate what the market's going to look like? How profitable it could be? So it makes perfect sense that until that uncertainty is taken away, that people won't commit significant resources.
I don't think there's any question that we've got to eliminate that uncertainty. And then if they do, then I think we're going to see things coming back. Let's take a quick break, folks. We'll be right back after this brief break. Mike Frantoni, good to have you on the broadcast again. With all the uncertainty going on in the industry, Mike, these conferences are so important. You have an upcoming conference. Tell our listeners about it.
Well, thanks, Dave. I think you're right. There really has never been a more important time to focus on risk management and quality assurance issues. And that's why we put together this conference, which is September 9th through the 11th in Dallas, MBA's Risk Management and Quality Assurance Forum.
Tell us a little bit about the content of this conference.
Certainly. So we're going to have a couple of general sessions focusing on changes in the regulatory environment, managing risk within your organization day-to-day, both loan by loan and across your institution, and managing risk in the context of these new regulations. And as such, we're going to have speakers from the FHA, from Ginnie Mae, CFPB, and from some of the bank regulatory agencies. Then we're going to have a large number of concurrent sessions in four tracks: risk analytics, underwriting, servicing QC, and quality assurance. You know, topics ranging from mitigating repurchase risk to developments in automated underwriting, looking at the latest from the rating agencies, and then the reemergence of manual underwriting. You've had too much reliance on AU in the past, and now you're having underwriters having to get back to basics and learn what it takes to underwrite a loan manually.
A lot of people need to be at this. How can they learn more? What's the website?
So you go to the MBA website, www.mortgagebankers.org, and it's right in the upper right there. It's the RMQA conference, Risk Management and Quality Assurance, September 9th through 11th in Dallas.
Listeners, I encourage you to be at these conferences. This is important, especially with all that's going on, as we talk about here on the radio program regularly. Michael, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the broadcast and telling our listeners about this important conference.
Thank you, David. Look forward to seeing everybody there.
Allison, Joe, these conferences are really important, and I think it's so important that our listeners get there and start listening to these topics. Also, I'm going to be speaking for listeners at the Five Star Conference. It's also in Dallas. I'm going to be there the 5th and the 6th. It goes through the 7th. I'm speaking on a panel. And, Joe, we're talking about new products, and it's really interesting. And when I listen to some of the new products that some of the companies are developing, Citi's got some really interesting, innovative in their portfolio products, but there's some really interesting products in the marketplace. And so we're doing a whole panel discussion Thursday afternoon. I think we're going from 3:30 to 5 o'clock. Hour and a half session there, and I'll be in there talking about some of the other things we're seeing on there. But, Joe, it's encouraging to see some of these new programs to actually start surfacing and coming in.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with them, Dave, but it's surprising given how difficult it is to define under CFPB rules whether or not those new products are going to be acceptable. You know, there's so many. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, that is one of the questions they're bringing up, is we're trying to come out with these things, but it's looking at it in light of CFPB. That's right. That's a very good observation. Alice, do you see some products? I mean, a lot of people call you for ideas. We got this idea we're thinking about doing. Are you seeing some new products coming forth?
Well, other than, as you mentioned, a couple of the big lenders, I have seen a couple of smaller or mid-sized credit unions come out with a second mortgage program with. You thought, who the heck's doing that? And so I do see some folks kind of dipping their toe in the water with an environment of risks that they can feel that they can control.
Well, it's really getting into the point where why I bring this up is the whole new product thing is that there are people out there really trying to get some products and some capital brought to the market to really fix things. The question is, it's going back to the whole series of broadcasts we're going to be doing in the month of September, is which administration, a Romney administration or an Obama administration, which is going to be most likely to bring that about? We're again going to have special guests of Tom Piercy, David Stevens, Les Parker, and a host of others. And we may just keep that going all the way through the election because we're going to be focusing a lot more on it. It's very, very important. We've got a lot of people bringing us a lot of facts. Let's go quickly out to some of the other news items that are going out there. Joe, some of the things that you're seeing. How's the market so far, Joe?
Well, the market's improved during our call. We're now up 8:30 seconds. We'd been up 9:30 seconds just a few minutes ago. And anyone who got pricing before, say, 9:30 or 10 this morning is likely to receive favorable price changes.
That's interesting. More improvement. So, Alice?
Well, I would just say I'm seeing more folks who realize they have to pay attention to the proposed rule stage. You know, in years past, I think we didn't, and we learned a really hard lesson in a couple of, you know, the new GFE and the LO comp back 2 years ago, and this time around, let's not sit on our heels. So you can go ahead and make sure that you go to regulations.gov, and that's where you can respond to these comments. And it's not a bad idea to really start looking at a few of them that we know this is what's going to happen and start looking at your systems and start doing some planning. We know they're going to come out with LO comp. We know we're going to have to make some ECOA appraisal requirements put in place. And so I think it's in the HPML for appraisals, that policy is, you know, in all likelihood that's moving forward. So start implementing now. Start having those discussions now.
There is a lot going on. These conferences that I encourage you at, we've got the annual conference. We're coming into conference season. We're going to be there. Alice, you and I are going to be at the state conference as well as the annual conference. Joe, which conference are you going to be attending?
I just got back from Lenders One, as you recall, and the next one we don't have on the agenda until early next year.
So you're going to be relaxing here while Alice and I didn't. Where our luggage out. The 99th annual MBA convention is coming up October 21st through the 24th, folks, and that's another one of the conferences. We'll also be speaking at Tony Moss's event, the AmeriCatalyst event. Very exciting to be part of that. And I'm actually on a panel with David Stevens and some of the top folks. So very good. Tune in or send me emails, invites to all those. That one, the AmeriCatalyst one, is an invitational only, so you do need to contact me if you have interest in going there. I'd be very much interested in having you there. One of the things that came up this last week I want to touch on just as we get ready to exit the broadcast is Jennie Mae, Michael Drain, the head of the single family program at Jennie Mae, gave a webinar, a campus MBA webinar. Very good. It really started getting into what are the requirements, where are they going, what can we anticipate as it relates to future requirements. They are putting up hurdles. They're not going to have people that just have a Jennie Mae approval that are not actively involved in the program. He got into really talking about how long it's taking and what are the requirements. The biggest kind of the, as my daughter says, the 411, the real information that came out of that is you have got to have someone that is really experienced at monitoring servicing. Just the fact that you're going to use a Dover Mule or a Cenlar or one of the third-party servicers to do that, that does not meet the requirement. Michael really got into that. That is a deficiency. He's in many applications. Many people turn in their applications just saying, we've got that. That's good enough. They'll be outsourcing that. Well, that is not Jennie Mae's approval or attitude towards that. Also, there is talk that we're hearing about out there that there's going to be higher net worth requirements, certainly by Jennie Mae. There's also some talk going on that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac may do the same. So tune into our broadcast. We'll be covering a lot of that as we go into the next, you know, the fall. We're going to be talking a lot about those issues. Appreciate you tuning into the broadcast each and every week and telling others about it.
be sure to get in and register on iTunes so you can download all the previous broadcasts and get set up to download automatically all the broadcasts we've got going on in September right on up to the annual conference in October. Appreciate tuning in. Have a great week, everyone, and tune in next week. We will be here broadcasting live on Labor Day. Thank you. Have a great week, everyone.
This has been Lickin on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week and thank you for listening.